Well, it's been 3 years since this individual has been on the program before. Stephen Bassett, he heads up the X Conference, and he'll tell us what it all means in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen Bassett, a leading advocate for ending the 60-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is a political activist, lobbyist, commentator, columnist, and conference producer. He's the founder of the Paradigm Research Group, the executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, the creator of the Paradigm Clock, and the executive producer of the X Conference since 1996. Mr. Bassett has assisted many organizations and initiatives making the case for an end to the government's truth embargo and an open congressional set of hearings to take the testimony of former military and agency employee witnesses to extraterrestrial-related events and evidence. He's got some great stories to tell. He's appeared on hundreds of radio and television shows and numerous documentaries delivering the message to millions of people of the likelihood and implications of disclosure, the former acknowledgement of the ET presence by the government's of the world, Stephen Bassett. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
George, good to be with you.
It's been a long time.
It has, and we go back many years now. It's almost a full decade.
1997, as a matter of fact,
we started back
in the St. Louis shows in the wee hours, both of us.
And here we are 10 years later, and the embargo goes on.
In the wee hours. Hey, Stephen, tell me, you know, it's been about 3 years since we really had the chance to talk with you on Coast to Coast. You have since really amplified the X Conference. Tell us what it is and what made you decide to put this together.
Well, the X Conference was never intended to just be another conference. There are many fine venues out there, and you know a lot of them. You've been to a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's just one more advocacy tool. Everything that Paradigm Research Group does is part of an activist effort to end this embargo, whether it's writings, whether it's the websites, the conference, town hall meetings. It all has one goal, and that is to end this truth embargo once and for all. And so the X Conference was designed to help that along, and that's why its focus is on exopolitics. X Conference stands for Exopolitics Expo, but I've shortened the X Conference. And who was invited to speak, the kind of topics they cover, the way the conference is constructed, all is designed to try to advance and enhance the public awareness of the politics of this and the need to get a political resolution. So this year, for instance, both X Conference 2007, which is scheduled for September 14th through 16th, to Hilton Gaithersburg near Washington,
mm-hmm.
and X Conference 2008, which is already booked for April 18 through 20 at the Hilton Gaithersburg, were intentionally plopped right down into the middle of what will easily be the longest and most expensive presidential election in history.
Are you starting to get the kind of exposure I think you should have and deserve to get from that mainstream media that we always think should at least start covering things like this?
You know, I've had my moments, George. Did a couple of Fox News segments that went very well. Shepard Smith was quite fair, and I enjoyed doing those. And continue to pound away at these media. They're constantly getting material from me, and now going on 10 years. And I really think that, like after X-Conference 2005, in that period, there was a potential for maybe to amp up, but the fact is that the war and the political turmoil that grew during that period just really pushed all the other issues away, and it made it very difficult to penetrate into the mainstream media. And that's not just my issue, our issue, but many others had the same problem.
That's true. Every tragedy that has occurred since 9/11 has just, I think, amplified the problem of trying to get the kind of exposure you need. Because let's face it, as much as we love the investigation of UFOs and extraterrestrial presence, when some bomb explodes somewhere or some horrible tragedy occurs, we've got to cover it as a group of people in the media. And it always seems that the field that you are in gets pushed way back.
It's easy to push this one aside So the media really has to stop this kind of obsessive compulsive fixations where they take an issue and go crazy. 26 channels covering the same thing every day. They're not covering the world. Right now, Paris Hilton gets probably more coverage than the UFO issue gets in a 2 or 3 year period. But the war is real and important, but there are other things. That said, it is the nature of the beast now. And so you bide your time, you continue to put the information out. But it's also worth noting that through all these years, the ups and the downs, the impeachment trials, the wars, the blowing ups and everything else, at the core of the media on this issue has always been this show. Coast to Coast AM, continuing to put that information out week after week after month after month, so that ultimately the public, that core public that's following this, continues to be there. And historically, I think history will be very kind to this show and the role that it played as the mainstream media tried to get its act together.
And you are right, Stephen. Even in the moment of horrible tragedy, we always need and we do find room for issues like this. You have to create that balance, and because of what Art started, we need to continue to carry that torch. And I'm just glad that people like you and Bud Hopkins and Stanton Friedman and so many others haven't given up, that you still have the faith that you're going to get the truth out once and for all.
And we can go one step further. I've written about this, and many of my colleagues have written about this. I believe that this truth embargo and the huge secrecy structure that it's embedded in, what I like to call the secret empire, which was built not just for this but for other purposes, not the least of which being the Cold War, that this truth embargo and this secret complex has a significant place in this history and a lot of the problems that we're dealing with, and that resolving this embargo has the potential to dramatically impact these other events and behaviors that we're seeing. In other words, I think there's a lot of dysfunctional government and there's a lot of dysfunctional policy going on, and a lot of that is being driven by a secrecy obsession that the government has indulged in for far too long. And breaking that obsession and getting into that secret empire is going to be incredibly difficult. But the best door we have into that mansion and the biggest lever we have to pry it open with is the huge public interest in this extraterrestrial phenomena question, the massive evidence that's been put together, and all of the enormous implications of bringing this info out. And so it's not just a matter of this is another issue. This may be an issue that ends up helping us deal with a lot of other problems. So its overall impact could be incredible historically.
And what's so amazing, too, Stephen, is you have felt so strongly about this issue that you decided a couple of years ago to run for Congress in the Baltimore area, and this was one of your major issues.
Well, I mean, it was just another activist maneuver. I mean, I'll do anything.
to get the word out.
including running for Congress. And it was a very carefully planned thing. It was the 8th District, where I'm based, is right outside the Beltway near Washington. I knew it was going to be one of the most closely followed campaigns in the country because a member of the Kennedy family, the Shriver family, was in the Democratic primary.
Did you think you were going to win at all,
Stephen? No, of course not. Getting on the ballot was the goal, and that's not easy. Believe me, our system now is brutal on third-party candidates, third parties, and independents. That's one of the reasons why we're in so much trouble. We've shut down so much additional thinking and
sure.
Put blinders on the parties that they can't even see.
Regardless of what people think, it's still a two-party system in this country.
Yeah, and I don't mind a two-party system if they at least are fair and allow these other views out there so people can get a broader picture. I understand the concept of a two-party system. Anyway, the idea was to get on that ballot, and we did. I mean, some people worked very hard, and we gathered 5,000 signatures, which gave us the privilege of being on that ballot. So there was just three candidates in that final election, November the 7th, 4th, I think it was. The Republican, Connie Morella, a wonderful woman, 8-term incumbent. Chris Van Hollen, who is gone on to become a serious player in the Democratic Party. In fact, I think he was just appointed, a significant post in the party,
mm-hmm.
And myself. And there were 20 debates. I was able to get into about 5 or 6, which was good. I mean, I should have been in all of them, but, you know, I've stated the problem. including the major debate, which was on Channel 8 television. And those questions were asked. I was asked E.T. questions. They were asked E.T. questions. And there was no ridicule. There was no...
Nobody rolled their eyes in the crowd?
Oh, I think probably a couple people did, but believe me, I held my own. And the reason to do this was to send a message that, you know, this is real, and very intelligent people are capable of talking about it without falling apart on camera or breaking out in flop sweats or whatever. And at the same time, the people dealing with this issue can answer questions about any political question. Just ask it. And that was the point. And that congressional campaign ended up getting great attention. It was the most expensive campaign in the country, unfortunately. The impact of this effort was muted substantially by an extraordinary event that happened to occur, one of these out-of-the-blue things, and that's that at the height of the campaign, when the media would have been most intense, two fellows came into town that were referred to eventually as the Beltway Snipers, and they started shooting people at random.
Yep.
And in my district, they actually shot people at the grocery stores where we were campaigning. And it was one of the biggest media frenzies in the history. It was the biggest media frenzy in the history of Montgomery. Look, water under the bridge. You do what you can do. Things happen. You do the best you can. But it was a wonderful experience. I owe tremendous debt to the people that helped me. I got 1,700 votes, and I assure you I appreciated every one of them.
Isn't it strange, though, that just when you are about ready to try to exploit this issue, something major happens? I remember, you tell me if I'm wrong, when Stephen Greer tried to put on his disclosure project, didn't 9/11 occur right around that period?
4 months later.
Yeah.
You know, George, you're beginning to sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, yeah, just about. Just about. Well, you know, I've kicked around this a long time, Stephen. You have, too. You have sacrificed a lot. You have gone without a lot because you want to get this message out. And you haven't given up. And doggone it, people like you deserve to finally get this thing public and to get the answer out. Because you're like bulldogs. Once you bite, you don't let go.
Well, I would put it a little differently. It's not that I deserve to have disclosure. I'm no one. I dedicated my life to this in 1995, and it's going to be all I'm going to do the rest of my life. And I'm incredibly lucky. It's been an extraordinary experience on so many levels. I've made some sacrifices, but it's nothing compared to what any fellow serving or woman serving in Iraq's doing right now. But the point is that the people of this country deserve disclosure. And I'm very fond of this country. My father was in the Navy, served at Guadalcanal. My mother's brother was at Pearl Harbor, up 3 days, you know, dragging sailors out of the water. One of my uncles worked for the CIA. I come from a military family, and I grew up very, very much a patriot and thinking this is the greatest country. Vietnam definitely hurt that. It changed me in a lot of ways. This is a great country, and it's in deep trouble. And if it gets in deeper trouble, it's going to be an enormous problem for the world. The world cannot lose the United States to some unacceptable fate. And this secret empire and the disclosure issue may be critical to getting on with the business of state and the business of this planet. And so I want to do this for that reason. I want to have an impact, but it's not so that I can see disclosure. God knows I'll be very disappointed if I don't live to see it. I'm not worried about that.
How old are you now, Steve?
Oh, do we have to go?
Oh yeah, come on.
Give
me a range,
George. And you know, it's funny, but my life literally marries up with this entire 60-year period, starting in, of course, early 1947.
All right, let's say life expectancy 17. You're healthy. You'll probably go at least 20, 25 more years, get you into the 80s. But we got to get this done before that, don't we?
I went to that site, Eons, you know, that where you put all this information in, and it tells you what your life expectancy is, and I got a solid 85 on that sucker, so I was quite pleased.
But I did that once, and I already died 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's the downside. I'm really sorry for that, George. I'm sure you can improve.
You've got a ghost doing the show here with you.
Wait, yeah, very good. Look, let me make very clear. I don't want to give the wrong impression. I believe the disclosure is very close at hand. Last April, I reset the paradigm clock at the main site, Paradigm.
What is the paradigm clock? Tell us.
The paradigm clock is the device I came up with in 1998 modeled after the doomsday clock, which most people know about, particularly the baby boomers like you and I.
That's the atomic.
Yeah, that's midnight's nuclear war, and they use that clock to sort of educate people to, you know, are we getting closer or further from nuclear war? And we got close a number of times, and that clock still exists, by the way, and in a number of the last couple of years, they have moved it closer.
Well, that's right. They've moved a few ticks up. That's right.
Yeah, they have, which I think people should need to be a little more aware of. And I said, look, I'm going to create another clock, and I'll call it the paradigm clock, and midnight will be not nuclear war, but something else. Midnight on the paradigm clock is, in fact, disclosure, that word that we hear so much of, but disclosure with a capital D. And that means formal disclosure. That means the governments of the world formally acknowledging to their people, their citizens, that there is, in fact, an extraterrestrial presence. This event will be the most profound event in human history. And that's midnight on the disclosure on the paradigm clock. And over the years, I've moved that clock closer or further from midnight. And it sits at that website. It has a very substantial history, a chronology going all the way back to 47. I basically published the clock retroactively in 47 to marry it up with the doomsday clock, which was created in
1940. And where is it now on the clock
scale? I moved it to 15 seconds to midnight based upon some
really
I was aware of a year ago. And people can read about that. It's up there. I put out press releases. But, again, because of the war, it just sort of – it just scattered into the wind. It didn't get picked up. That's fine. But we have been on the precipice for some time. And without getting into the reasons, and there are many, probably the most important one is that I learned from an unusual source, as well as from my regular, you know, observation of what's going on, that an extraordinary breach had developed simultaneously between the military, the intelligence community, and the administration, the executive. Unprecedented. A level probably not seen in our lifetime. Most of this breach was essentially hidden. I mean, there were plenty of indicators in the arena. If you read the news, there were things about generals coming forward and this and that and everything else, and dissent at the CIA and all that stuff. But the actual breach, of course, was below water, like the tip of an iceberg, like an iceberg, right? And it was huge. And this created a very interesting situation. And I'll describe it this way. And by the way, this is still the case. This breach still remains.
All right, has not gone away.
No. And in fact, it could get even deeper. And it creates a situation. This is a little subtle, but in a few words, it's this. There is substantial, desire on the part of some of the deep management people in this issue to end the embargo. There are others that are opposed to it. There's kind of like a, you know, back and forth kind of a standoff. If the group inside decides to go ahead and move to disclose, right, to start the process, which quickly would lead to the event we're talking about, because of this breach, if the administration were to move to block, they would ignore that, move ahead anyway. And that's very significant. On the other hand, the circumstances facing the current administration are so extraordinary and so dire. And the difficulties they face, not only externally, which are well documented, but internally, are so extraordinary that there is a very powerful incentive for the executive administration to look to something dramatic that could truly change the subject and allow them to reposition all of the dialogue and the media and their critics and everything else and change the subject. And there is no bigger subject changer out there right now.
Would it be, Stephen, would it be a real subject or would it be made up in that we've had some people on this program who have said, look for the phony alien invasion to divert attention. Is that possible, Stephen?
It is possible, and after the break, I'll sort of parse it out a little bit. But
okay.
I'm not too worried about it, at least not on the disclosure event itself.
Stephen Bassett, our guest next hour. Stephen will be with us. We'll take your phone calls, but we'll be back with him as we talk about disclosure. And then we'll talk about a couple cases that he has chatted with some people. We'll get some issues. We'll be back. Okay, Stephen, what about the possibilities of a staged, phony alien invasion?
Possible, yes. Do they have the tech to do it? Yeah, particularly if they have re-engineered vehicles, which we think that they do. But first we start with disclosure. Well, okay. Look, a staged invasion.
And why would they stage it? Why? What would they want to do?
Oh, my God. I mean, the only reasons that they would do it would be for very bad reasons. It would be a historical catastrophe one of the most venal acts in all of human history. They would do it for control reasons.
Panic. We'd panic. They'd keep their thumb on us.
I mean, you could. I mean, your audience, I'm sure, could probably come up with 1,000 reasons why they might do it.
Yeah.
I'm not too concerned about that, George. If I really thought that was going to happen, I would say so, or I would lean toward it. I think you have a disclosure event. The disclosure event itself is pretty straightforward. I'm not worried about that. That's simply announcing there's an ET presence. And that there is or there isn't. And so that's, you can't really spin that per se. So there isn't present. What we learn after that in the post-disclosure period, as they give us more information about what they know, that is important. And there's going to be temptation on the part of the old school in the government to try to get and milk that opportunity perhaps for internal agendas. That's why the public needs to be educated. That's why this show is important and everybody else that's working to raise public awareness, not simply to get disclosure, which we have to have, but to get ready so that when disclosure takes place, we're going to be listening really closely and parsing everything they say. And the moment we smell a rat, we need to start really screaming really loud.
You have talked with some government officials who have remained anonymous. They can't use their names yet. At what point, and I want you to give us one or two stories of some incredible things they've told you, Stephen, but at what point will they feel comfortable to come forward with their names?
Everyone has their own bar on that. They set the bar, and it's different for each person. But every time somebody in the political arena comes forward, it makes it easier for someone else to come forward. It's like a chain reaction. And let me just quickly mention some of the people that have come forward that we know about, and it's non-trivial. John Podesta came out of the closet in 2002, 2003, and then he founded the Center for American Progress. And that, you know, I've got the quotes up on the website of what he said there. Let me just read it, just give you how important that is.
All right.
Podesta said at the press conferences for the Sci-Fi Channel's Coalition for Freedom of Information when he introduced it. He said, I think it's time to open the books on questions that have remained in the dark on the question of government investigations of UFOs. We ought to do it because the American people, quite frankly, can handle the truth, and we ought to do it because it's the law. It is time for the government to declassify records that are more than 25 years old and to provide scientists with data that will assist in determining the real nature of this phenomena. Well, according to the government, we know the nature of this phenomena. There is no phenomena. Now, this is a man who was chief of staff to President Clinton. He was chief advisor to Clinton in national security and other matters in the early years during the key years of the Rockefeller Initiative, a whole other subject. We could do a show on that. He, of course, then founded the Center for American Progress with $25 million in banking, six or seven, which came from George Soros. Mm-hmm. It's a leftist center progressive think tank and a major component of the theoretical work being done behind the Democratic National Committee. This is a significant person out of the closet. Then Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, came out of the closet when his introduction to the Roswell Digg diaries, when he writes. And remember, this is forever, right? It's in the book, never going to go away. He says the mystery surrounding the crash at Roswell has never been adequately explained. That's interesting. I thought the government had explained it. Not by independent investigators and not by the U.S. government. This is a direct confrontation to the government's position. Now, if it was just the governor of some state and that was it, that would be one thing. Bill Richardson is one of the 10 Democratic candidates for president. He's considered
right.
A reasonable candidacy, a candidate. However, all of the insiders know he's not running for president. He's running for vice president, and there's a very, very good chance he will be.
Oh, you are so astute, Stephen.
And so he's out of the closet. And then, of course, Paul Hellyer, the former deputy prime minister of Canada and the minister of defense of Canada, a man who easily could have been the prime minister of Canada, but he's a bit of a maverick. Tremendous guy, an amazing human being. He steps forward and says, yeah, I actually never saw anything, but you just look at the evidence. It's quite obvious, isn't it? The extraterrestrial explanation. Buzz Aldrin recently has upped the ante by stating that they did see some UFOs following those craft. And, of course, Ed Mitchell keeps talking. And Fife Symington, very interesting story there, Fife Symington. Interesting fellow, well-connected man. The Symington family, huge history in politics.
Right. Former governor of Arizona.
Arizona, during, of course, the Phoenix Lights event. Mm-hmm. And he made fun of it, and that was all. We all sort of know about that. It's up on the website. But he also had his own problems. He had been indicted. He was indicted again and, in fact, convicted of some financial improprieties. He had to resign from the governorship. But he was pardoned by Bill Clinton, so he never went to prison. He then went on. I tell you, he has a wonderful wife, fine family, to become a fine citizen, kind of a high-level guy in Santa Barbara. He's on some boards there. He founded a culinary institute. 10 years later, in an interview, he elects to come forward and say, you know, not only was I wrong to do what I did back then and make fun of this, I actually saw the Triangle Craft that traversed the state earlier that day, the major event, and that it was otherworldly. Now, understand, several National Guard, the National Guards trotted out, about every few years, they trot out somebody to say, oh, no, it was just flares.
Right.
Even
right.
The flare argument for the later event doesn't hold up very well, but the earlier event's never been explained. There is no rationale for him to do this. He is a man who was disgraced. He was forced to resign from the governorship. And yet, 10 years later, he makes this extraordinary statement.
Well, he came on the program, Stephen. He stuck his neck out.
Exactly. Yep. So, I mean, I'm not telling you something you don't know. But for me, when I look at these things, I look at it again through the eyes of the political activist who's been following the Washington scene and this whole business for 10 years. This should not be happening, George. I believe that he is a connected guy. I think his family's obviously got plenty of inside connections, and that somebody's tipped him off and told him, you know, you say that, you're on the side of the angels. So you see people like this coming forward, and it's going to make it easier for others to come forward. Recently, a Lockheed scientist by the name of Boyd Bushman gave an extensive interview to David Sirita, and that's only just in the early stages, but that's on camera, and he allowed his name to be used, and he stated that there was no pressure for him not to do this. I think this was a backdoor maneuver by Lockheed to bring the press their way. In other words, give it to David, who's not mainstream, have
right.
him put it in play. And then when CNN shows up at the door, we'll throw up our hands and say, you got us. This is powerful stuff that should not be happening. And more importantly, let me
point. Well, what did he say? Was he talking about anti-gravity or what?
Well, I think you actually had David on the show. Remember, he was the one that was...
David, yeah, David's always on. But
yeah, he gave him the demo about anti-gravity. He said he'd been working on
it. The anti-gravity issue. Yeah.
He said it was from UFO technology. He confirmed that the UFOs are real, that Roswell was real. This is a retired Lockheed scientist who I think was green-lighted to do this. This is extraordinary stuff, but even more extraordinary. I follow Washington pretty well, and those who do know that Washington is going through one of the most bitter, partisan, nasty periods in modern history. The last 8 years have been absolutely brutal, going back to the Clinton impeachment and onward. John Podesta and Bill Richardson outed themselves on the ET issue. Basically contradicted the government's position by any rationale. Every one of their opponents, not only in the other party, but in their party, should have ripped them to pieces. They should have called them UFO wingnuts and
mm-hmm.
wackos and disassembled them. They have been untouched. And the reason they have been untouched, I believe, is because the people on the other side know that they're right. And if they were to go after him on this thing, the whole thing could blow up in their face, particularly if disclosure is close at hand.
Isn't it incredible, Stephen, to even assume that all this could one day come right out into our laps and be real? I mean, we all believe it's real. But I mean, to be able to finally, without any shadow of doubts or arguments, hear the admission that we've been visited. And I think we've been visited since the beginning of mankind, of course. I mean, what an extraordinary story.
Well, it's going to happen. You can bank on it, and I'm getting ready and ready to party, and I got the party hats and everything ready to go. But you wanted some inside stories.
Yes.
I had a meeting set up for me by some physicist in Bethesda to meet someone. It was specifically set up to meet. A little nice evening, Chinese mm-hmm. takeout. And the person that I met was a staff sergeant major, a command sergeant major. But one of these guys, not Bob Dean. We're talking to somebody else completely. These are the people that get things done. And this is somebody who'd worked with Stubblebine and a lot of other names you would know. And what happened is we all had a wonderful chat, and then the subject turned to UFOs, and this fellow confirmed to me that Roswell was real, the ETs are here, and that there had been crash retrievals. And that was it. And then toward the end of the evening, he threw one in because he knew I knew that already. He threw one in, though, to tantalize me. He said, I'll give you something you probably don't know. I said, what's that? He said, you probably don't know where the real center of the ET issue is in America. And I think that means the real center of where the government's interacting with it. And you can define that any way you want.
Right.
I said, I don't know. He said, it's West Virginia. I did some research and looked into that, and West Virginia makes a lot of sense.
Why?
Oh, first of all, there's a lot of underground facilities that have been built to go back a long ways. Secondly, the rock there is the densest in all of North America, some say in all the world, meaning you get underneath that, nobody can penetrate it.
Uh-huh.
More importantly, that's where they built the congressional bunker, by the way, which has been acknowledged. More importantly, it's at a distance where high-level people in Washington, including the president, could simply hop in a car, drive over, meet, talk, chat, do whatever they have to do, and come back. Nobody would even know it.
Yeah.
Have to get on a plane. So that was an incident. And then a friend of mine, a staffer on the Hill, was at a cocktail party. When an ass, after a few drinks, she's talking to this person was talking to an astronaut, one of the names we don't know, you know, one of the lesser astronauts, I guess.
But an astronaut nonetheless.
Nonetheless, and brought up the subject, and the astronaut said, yeah, you know, ETs are definitely here. I would never say it publicly. I've had a few other people tell me, confirm it to me, within government. And I have other colleagues that have had this. Now, when will all these other people come forward? Well, you know, they will when they're ready. I have never encouraged anyone to violate the law or their oaths or anything else and come forward. I only suggest they consider their conscience and do what they think is right. Some have come forward without violating anything. Many of them consider themselves not whistleblowers at all. Of course, they've never thought he's a whistleblower. But the witnesses, as you know, have been mounting. Greer probably knows a lot more people like that than I, and then the numbers keep growing. And then they're being added to by people like Hellyer and so forth. So the situation, George, is ridiculous. I mean, we know that there's an ET presence. The government knows we know there's an ET presence. We know the government knows that we know that there's an ET presence. I mean, the whole thing has become kind of a ridiculous charade. At the beginning in the 40s and the 50s, it was certainly legal. Probably justified. I wouldn't want to argue that. But after a while, it lost its justification. After the Cold War, it definitely lost its justification. And now, frankly, this embargo is an abomination, George, and it's an insult to the collective intelligence of the human.
And you're not going to give up until you get the answer.
Well, no, my colleagues aren't either. You know them, Alfred Weber and Michael Sala and Vigiani and Mike Bird and Paula Harris and people that are lining up now in Mexico and Brazil, and researchers like Nick Redfern and Pope and Good and Gilda Barre. A lot of these are coming to the X conference in September. They're not going to give up because they know it's true. They know how important it is, and they believe, as I do, that if we don't get this truth out there, then we're going to continue to have systemic lying and dysfunctional government, and the indications are that we're headed for not just problems, but calamities. And so we really are under time pressure. We don't have the luxury of sitting back and just letting it all work out. We need to get this embargo ended. We need to start reforming the secret empire. We need to start bringing transparency to government, not only here, but in the NATO countries, and reestablish a balance of governance and relationship between the government and the people. And if we don't do that pretty soon, I fear this century could go really bad.
Speculate on how you think it will happen. How will disclosure occur? How will we obviously know?
It will happen quickly, because once they make the decision, they have to move quickly. Otherwise, it'll leak out and create a lot of mess. Once the decision is made, they'll line up some people. They'll call for a press conference. It'll be held at some significant place. There will be many people on the panel from a broad range of positions, not only government, but some military, some agency, and maybe even some civic leaders, maybe a religious leader or two. There'll be a neutral kind of person respected to moderate the panel. It'll probably be introduced by the president from the Oval Office, but the president won't go into the details. It'll be something to the effect of a major announcement. We want you to know this. May or may not refer to the content. Then the thing will this tends to depoliticize it a little bit, and they don't want it to seem too political, certainly when it happens. Then you'll cut to the press conference. The moderator will make an announcement as to what's about, well, the key issue. There's an ET presence. They'll open it up to questions, and there'll be a press conference. It'll go on for 2 or 3 hours, and that's it. That's disclosure. Done. Now, then we're in the post-disclosure world, and we then need to bring to bear everything we can muster our media, our supporters, financial backers, and everything else to build structures and to make sure that this profound event and its aftermath goes well. This is an incredible opportunity. It's also an opportunity for things to go badly, as all such paradigm changes are. And the American people are going to have to step to the plate, British people, French, Belgium, around the world. The third world, less so. They have other problems to worry about. But the first world citizens had better step up and make sure they keep their governments honest on this. And if they do, this may all work out pretty well. That's how I see it happening.
Will we get disclosure from Brazil, from France, or will it be a joint world effort?
You know, it would be nice if it was like coordinated and maybe done through the UN and all of that. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the tenor of the times. There's substantial things going on. There's many reasons the clock is 15 seconds to midnight. Believe me, it's not just the thing I mentioned earlier. Look, we've got people coming forward. We've got governments dumping records all over the place. They can't dump UFO sighting cases out fast enough. UK has been doing that for 3 years. France did the Cometa report in 2000. Then they just dumped 1,600, oh, I think it's 5,000, I forget how many, UFO cases. The interesting cases, not just anything, into the Internet. This was done by the CNES, the French Space Agency. Mexico has made overtures of cooperation with UFO researchers, has Brazil. These countries are basically sending messages to the United States that we're tired of waiting. We're tired of deferring to you on this. We know you won World War II. We know you won the Cold War. You're big and you're powerful, and we have some debts to you, but the fact is that you're losing your prestige, you're losing your way, and we need to get on with the world. We need to get on with dealing with this planet, and we can't fix it if we don't know the truth about it. And so it's very possible that disclosure will not be initiated by the U.S. It will be triggered by Canada or U.K., France, possibly Brazil or Mexico, and there may be China. China is definitely a possibility, less so Russia, though I may change my mind after the new president takes over.
Is it you're going to be in Roswell, right? You come on the 60th anniversary?
Well, I'll be in Roswell. I'm also going to be speaking it up at the Culture of Contact, Jeremy and Bill Burns' event in New York, which is a wonderful event. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be speaking at the Crash Retrieval Conference in November. I'm back in full operation.
Okay, I'm going to be in Roswell doing the show live on Friday, the 6th of July.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you come by, and just so everybody knows, we've got some information on the coasttocoastam.com website. It is free to come up to listen to the program, and just come up and say hi to me, Steve. We may grab you again and throw you behind a microphone.
I'll do it. I've never met a mic I didn't like.
Well, that's true. Hey, Stephen, we're going to take phone calls when we come right back. How can people get a hold of you?
Well, of course, the email is the best way, prg@paradigmresearchgroup.org. And the website has all that information up. And the X Conference can be accessed at x-conference.com. The phone number's up on the website. You can get it there. And the website's loaded. The PRG website now is I got to toot my horn. It's just extraordinary. There's just some amazing stuff
there.
Yeah,
you've done some good work. Stay with us. Stephen Bassett back next hour. We'll take your phone calls real fast night. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Stephen Bassett, our guest. We're going to take your phone calls with him as well, as we look at disclosure and the possibilities. Stephen, when we started talking about this 10 years ago, how closer are we, do you believe? I mean, if you had had the paradigm clock up then, 1997, where would it have been?
It would have been about where I said it, 98. I think I said initially it's 7 minutes of, though frankly, in retrospect, I might have said it closer. We have been close to disclosure, I think, a couple of times. I believe the disclosure was set to happen in the second Bush administration, and George H.W. Bush. They were just dumbfounded when he lost. It just wasn't supposed to happen.
They didn't expect that, no.
Yeah.
That's true.
And then when Rockefeller approached Clinton in 93, and the whole initiative started, the internal people just panicked because they didn't want Clinton to be the disclosure president, and I think that helped launch the attacks against the administration. They were just petrified that he would act on this, and I think he almost might have. They kept the attack. So if the Rockefeller initiative had gone differently and Clinton had more political capital, we might have seen disclosure under Clinton at the maybe the beginning of the second term. They kept the pressure on him, though, intensely for right to the very end, as you know. And then we had the new administration. The May 9th press conference held by the Disclosure Project was a major event, a lot bigger than people may realize. I was kind of on the inside, so I have a better view of it. And that event triggered some media interest. I know Nightline was on it, and some others were going to follow. And that could have started a cascade of events and could have led to disclosure. But that was ended by the 9/11 event.
And Stephen was never able to get that conference broadcast on television, was he? Yeah, I'm not talking about local cable, but I mean a big network. Nobody
not
picked it
yet.
Up.
No. But the material's there, and documentaries will be created at some point, and many documentaries have been created since then. But clearly, it was a setback, huge setback. And I think we could have easily had disclosure in 1947 if that crash had occurred in a different place. If that vehicle had crashed in downtown Roswell or much closer, or if things had gone a little differently after the event, because the truth embargo wasn't in place at that point. They were really – it was a tremendous state of confusion. They scrambled to get their act together. So we very easily could have had disclosure in July, August of 1947, but it didn't happen. And there may have been a couple other close calls. So, I mean, this has not been a slam dunk. It has been an extraordinary effort on the part of the government, and my hat's off to them that they've kept the embargo in place for 60 years. But we've come close. I believe now we are very close now for a host of reasons, some of which we've talked about, some of which we haven't. But I'm just saying I don't foretell the future. I just look at the present and try to analyze and project as best possible. I think everybody in your audience needs to be ready for disclosure at any time, like tomorrow. They need to be ready to respond and act, because when it happens, it'll happen very fast. And I think the door is open on a couple of levels.
Okay, to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi.
Hello, George.
Yeah, welcome to the show. And where might you be calling from?
Hi, my name is Scott. I'm calling from Carrollton, Georgia.
Okay, Scott.
I would like to submit that I'm not a fan of disclosure. I never have been, and I'd like to give you my reasons why.
Okay.
Primarily, I believe, I hate to say it, but I actually believe in the government on this particular occasion. I believe that they are doing this for the greater good. One of the things that these disclosure advocates, in my opinion, are not thinking through is I don't believe that the extraterrestrials, I believe that they're here. I believe that they've been here through the entire history of the human race. I don't think that they're the cuddly little creatures we see in the movies, be it E.T. or Close Encounters. I don't even think that they're peers like, say, Vulcans or Klingons on Star Trek. I think that these are beings that very likely created us, or at the very least have tampered with us,
mm-hmm.
for lack of a better term, through our entire history. And these are beings that were content to be worshipped by us in the ancient world. And I think that is the effect that the government, possibly even the world government, fears. And I do believe it would have an absolutely devastating effect on the entire human race to know this, to know that we are basically an ant farm to these beings.
That we've been worshiping not a true deity, but extraterrestrials that we may have been misinterpreted, confused, thought they were angels, whatever. That's what you're saying?
Well, no, I'm not saying that we've been worshiping them necessarily, but in the ancient world, I believe that the gods that were worshipped, the gods that are described, be it, say, the Greek gods, for example, I believe that they were extraterrestrial beings, or the gods of ancient Egypt, for example. But whether they were or not, I believe that there has been an extraterrestrial hand in the entire human history and the affairs of human beings. I think that, for example, Arthur C. Clarke's 2001, I think it hit it right on the nail, right on the head, that they came here very early in the formation of humans and had something to do with this. They may be our outright creators. And I'm not talking about a religious aspect as far as we've been worshiping them, whether there's a God or not. That's a whole different issue, in my opinion. But it's just, I think that it would throw humanity as a whole into chaos for these not to be, you know, cute, fuzzy aliens like we see in the movies. If these turn out to be godlike beings, for lack of a better term, I think that will scare the bejeebers out of the human race.
Maybe even evil, all right? Maybe they're doing some things that aren't very good.
Absolutely. I mean, if they're really behind alien abductions, and to me, the jury's kind of out on that whole thing. I don't know whether I buy that or not. But if there are alien abductions, and if some of the stories of people that have been on your show are true as far as the government knows this and has actually gone along with it for a technology exchange or whatever the stories are, and this comes out, what is that effect going to be on at least on the American population? That, yes, we've known there's extraterrestrials, yes, they've been taking our citizens, and yes, the halls of power have known this. They went along with it.
Stephen, he is eloquently presented something that a lot of Americans are thinking about. What's your take on it?
I've heard this many times. Scott is clearly a very smart fellow. He's thought about it very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
This is a definite exopolitical position to take. I don't agree, but it would make for a very good debate, a wonderful debate, and we need to be having those kind of debates.
Now, when you say you don't agree in the lack of disclosure, but would you agree in his assessment that there could be panic when this is revealed?
No. My position is this. I'll try to be brief. In terms of the government, letting the government simply handle it, meaning trust them on this one, that's not unreasonable. We've done that in the past. We basically told the government, defend us from the communist threat, do whatever you got to do. We trust you. I can't take that position. Unfortunately, I've seen too much, starting really in the 60s, going all the way through to the present. And I've seen far too much to trust the government to handle this purely in secrecy, in a purely secret sub rosa process. And I'm deeply suspicious of the government's ability to do this, and I think if you look about what's going on in the world, I think that's a conclusion you have to come to. So that's not an option for me. The other point is this. This whole business about things are going to fall apart and people are going to go crazy and everything else, a lot of that's propaganda. It's being generated by the government itself from the very get-go. The Brookings Report was propaganda. All of the referrals to the Orson Welles War of the Worlds event on the radio, it's all nonsense propaganda. We don't really know. We have no definitive way of knowing how the people will respond, but they've been through a lot already, and I think they'll do quite well. So it's been overblown, and I think the government's driving that. It's not like we arrived at that through a reasonable consensus, but it's a propagandistic-driven process. I think people will handle it. I think it'll be almost anticlimactic. Now, that said, let's be clear. We don't know all the details. And let's say some of these aliens are really dangerous and a threat. Well, I would say better that all 6 billion of us know this so we can marshal our forces and deal with it, as opposed to being left completely in the dark to be, quote, surprised by an alien attack someday. Or they are doing abductions, which I happen to think they are, or at least there are contact events which are coerced and unpleasant. I think the best chance for those to end is full disclosure. I think when the entire world knows that these ETs are here and those kind of things are happening, I'll bet it's going to become a lot harder to do them. I think if you're an abductee and you don't like what's happening, you need to be lining up behind disclosure. It's your best chance. In general, though, look, I am certain that when disclosure takes place, in the aftermath, as we start to learn the details, whether we have to fight for those details or whether the government is generous in giving them out, we're going to learn things that are going to excite us and stimulate us and get us fired up. We're going to learn some things that are going to scare us. We're going to learn some things that are going to confound us. Well, what else is new, right? What else is new about being alive in this world? It's one thing after another. It's change. It's never standing still. And So this idea that we can just sort of block the truth out and let a government that's been dysfunctional for 40 years work out all the details while it screws everything up in the open, right? And I'm just talking about our government. I'm talking about the governments of the world in general. To me, it makes no sense. Look, life is never easy, but we know one thing. If you've got the truth, you got a better shot. If you're dealing with lies, you don't have such a good shot. And so let the people have the truth. We'll deal with what's there, and we'll make the best of it. But the current circumstances, to me, are hardly acceptable. So I must disagree with Scott, but his points are quite well taken, and I think you'll see that debate happen more.
I got to tell you, though, Stephen, even I think about the possibilities, and, you know, when you remember the movie Contact, the groups of people that would congregate in the desert, I really think governments would collapse in some cases if people truly believed that we were being visited, are being visited. I think there would be chaos in the streets.
I got to disagree, George. I don't see it. I don't see the evidence for it.
In contact, that
stuff that was happening, it was mild. Mild. Wouldn't even hold up to the L.A. race riots of the 60s. He clearly tried to demonstrate that there would be a reaction and there would be some turmoil, but basically it was hippies getting together and hanging out there in the desert and raising some issues. And, yeah, one guy got really uptight and went and blew up something. Well, gee, that happens
all the time.
Well,
but that was what contact. I mean, we weren't told in that movie that they had been here. You know, this would be even more elaborate where we've been visited. Maybe we are who they are. I mean, those possibilities are, you know, not that people would panic from fear, but I just think it would change people's perceptions of everything.
Of course it would, but that's not the same thing as falling apart. And let me make another point. If we self-disclose, if the governments do their job and go to the people and say, here's what's going on, which is what the people expect the government to do, and reinforce the social contract, that's a positive. If the government doesn't do that, and these aliens one day decide to show up and put 100 saucers over our major cities, how do you think the people are going to feel about that? Right? Now the government has completely broken its contract. It hasn't done its job. Here these aliens are now there. It's clearly now we're having contact itself. There's been no self-disclosure. That could generate chaos. I would make the point that failing to exercise the social contract and tell the truth to the American people and the other people of the world that these entities are here poses a greater risk for chaos. Right?
To the
because
phones
it opens
we
up
go.
The possibility of a force majeure event, which is going to scare the hell out of people.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yeah, this is Tommy from Seattle.
Hello, Tommy.
Howdy.
Yeah, I've been, let's see, May 1992, I saw 4 5-foot-tall gray aliens in my yard. And I decided, how do I report this to the government? I wrote a little story and copyrighted it so that the thought that the National Security Agency would be monitoring the Copyright Office and they would thus be informed. 6 weeks later, my neighbor across the backyard fence, whom I had never seen before, stripped all the branches off a 100-foot pine tree and hung a 15-by-30-foot American flag up there as if to show somebody who owned what. And then after that, I was drugged in the middle of the night to semi-consciousness and asked about an abduction that happened and like that. And I think it's time, as adverse to what the previous caller said, people to get our heads out of the sand. I've had 30-plus visits, tourist-like. I'm something of a tourist attraction because the groups come through my shop asking me the same question, so I know I'm dealing with different groups, and their one flaw is intense curiosity, and I don't think they want us to disclose because of the fact that you can't study a cockroach if it's hiding under a rock. And my question to the guest is how do I keep my friends from thinking I'm nuts when I talk about it? Hello?
I would say that you don't worry about your friends. Tell them the truth. Tell them what's going on. They'll think what they think. But you're you're going to feel better about yourself if you're true to your events and your history and your story there. And in due course, you will be fully vindicated. I must disagree with you about the aliens, I think, intention regarding disclosure. If you look at their behavior in general, and I'm talking about they're being photographed, filmed, seen, the number of abductees that are remembering events and so forth, they are not acting like entities that don't want a disclosure process to be going on down here. In fact, they're doing the kinds of things that would almost certainly drive a self-disclosure down here. And so my take is that, in fact, they do want disclosure. They want us to do it, but they're sort of edging it along, helping it along. And I think the reason is that the self-disclosure must happen before formal contact can happen. Notice I said formal contact. There's already contact. Formal contact, like, you know, them and us get together for dinner down at the local, you know, restaurant there in Washington, and the CNN cameras there to watch it all happen. I think that contact is where we're ultimately heading, but self-disclosure needs to come first. So, hey, stick to your story, my friend. Apparently you're one of the chosen few, you're holding up pretty well. And by the way, Scott, who voiced some very strong beliefs about what was happening and all the terrible things and so forth that he believed was the case, but Scott seems to be doing pretty well, seems to be holding up, sounds pretty sane to me, and I'll bet his fellow humans will do just as well.
Well, but we're talking about the masses, Stephen. Can the masses do this?
Jordan, I tell you, I have more confidence. Look, the masses can misbehave at times, but you want to know something? If you look at the world today, in many cases, it's the governments that are causing the problem, not the masses. But in some cases, the masses do create problems. But there's usually reasons for it. It's not just a craziness. They have reasons for what they do. So I think we have to be careful here. Look, 80% of the American people already polled that they believe the government's lying. 50% believe ETs are, in fact, behind UFO phenomena. Disclosure is going to be anticlimactic for most of them. And you're talking about the young generation from 15 to 25? It'll be like no problemo. And the fundamentalist Christians keep getting this bad rap about how they were going to go nuts. I don't believe that at all. I think
they'll
be just fine.
Bring them on. And we'll bring you on for final calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Back to the phones we go with our guest, Stephen Bassett. Hi there. You're on Coast to Coast.
Yes. Hello.
Yes. East of the Rockies. Go ahead.
Very interesting topic. I don't know that the society would easily freak out about the existence of, you know, aliens or anything like that, especially when we live in a perpetual state of fear. You know, bombs. Here, terrorists, this, that, bird flu, that, you know, it's an endless state of fear. So I think one more tinder on the fire wouldn't really make much of a difference. So I don't know if that argument really holds up, but there could be, you know, some extreme consequences for religion, though, if alien life has been proven to have had contact with mankind in any way. I think it would bring into question a control structure, basically, that is very set in stone, as you would say, especially in America. So,
what's your take, Stephen? Go ahead.
Well, you know, I've been paying a lot of attention to this issue of the religion, and I can say, I think, with high confidence, the Catholic Church is all ready to go on this, and that's 1 billion. All right, they are on top of it and ready to go, and they're going to not even break stride. There's 1 billion non-Catholic Christians, and when I look at the overall, at the Protestant faith, I'm not too concerned. Even the fundamentalist, there's going to be, and the Asian religions are extremely flexible and highly adaptable, and I'm not worried about them. The Muslim world is probably the biggest concern, but that's not because of the ET issue per se, but because the Muslim world is in turmoil right now, without question, and dealing with huge internal stresses. But overall, I think they will adapt because, look, the ETs still are not going to be able to tell us how they came about, right? And the universe, which may be infinite.
Because they don't know?
Well, if they do, I'm dying to hear their explanation. But the fundamental core of religion deals with issues which transcend even ETs. And the presence of extraterrestrials. And by the way, these ETs, remember what Bud told you earlier in the show? These aren't gods. They make mistakes. they're injuring people, right? They're not prepping them right, and they're bumping their heads against the ceiling, and occasionally they'll bring you back with your clothes on backwards. They're not gods, and they may not be so super cool as we may think. They may be dealing with the same issues we're dealing with, a little bit higher tech. Who knows? But the fundamental issues of religion will remain. And I believe that in a post-disclosure world, you will see more people turning to religion, not turning away from it. And religion will adapt. And then we may learn some things about history and about religious history that have some ET connections, and that'll be provocative. But not all of religious history will suddenly be ETized. So again, I think it's proper to be concerned about that. But overall, don't see it. And again, when it comes to deciding how to live this life, whether you're a person or a nation, go with the truth. Every time. Go with the truth. Know the world as it is, and things will work out for the best.
First time caller line, you're up with Steve Bassett on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hi there. This is Freeman in Austin, Texas.
Sure thing. Great city. Go ahead, Freeman.
Yes. Well, my father was a worshipful master in Freemasons, and as such, he was on Killer One submarine with Jimmy Carter, built nuclear missiles, and then was in Project Blue Book. The most I ever got out of him was, flying saucers are real. But I've noticed that there is a connection between families and abductions, that it tends to go with families. And I have a major abduction scenario, and I've never heard anyone describe a craft similar to the one that I saw.
All right, go ahead.
This was over Daytona Beach, and it was a large rectangle. And I don't remember it arriving, nor do I remember it leaving, but I remember my finger following it. And I was with a friend, so we both had the story. And this thing was a large, very large, I would say 200 yards wide rectangle, with subdivided into four squares, and the four squares looked like translucent light. And we lost 5 hours of time after witnessing that, not knowing. It seemed like 10 minutes to us. And my friend reminded me that we didn't remember how to get home afterwards either. We seemed to be somewhat mind wiped. And from this time on, I've been making world predictions. I seem to have had a bit of foreknowledge. And I was curious on how someone like me could get regressive therapy to try and find out what happened during that 4 hours, 5 hours.
Well, the regressive therapy, you can find someone like a Dr. Bruce Goldberg, and you're in Austin, Texas. He might be able to refer you to a hypnotherapist in your area. You can get his email address off his website by going to coasttocoastam.com and just click on the left-hand side of the screen, show info, guests, and Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Interesting story there, though, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. The tens of thousands of them have been reported, but Bud'll confirm that. Tens of thousands reported in writing, massing, filing up, coming out. He's one of the chosen few. My hat's off to him. I hope it hasn't been too hard on him. Hopefully one day he'll learn more about that. But, you know, it's funny, but almost every community has like a New Age publication. We have one here called Pathways. This thing is now so well known and so ubiquitous that most of the regression therapists that are just out there, you know, doing their thing will take on the issue without a lot of hubbub and give it a good shot. You don't have to go to like a Bud Hopkins per se, because I think Bud's probably got all he can handle.
Yes.
Go to any decent hypnotist that's working, you know, ethically, and they're willing to explore that subject matter. And I encourage people to do it. I think I'd want to know. I'd want to know as much as I could about this. I think, again, that knowing the truth is helpful, and I wish this fellow well.
What got you involved in the field of ufology?
As I've said many times, George, I studied physics in college, and I was going to maybe go into NASA, maybe get a PhD in astrophysics, and I just sort of got sidetracked back during the Vietnam War. These were difficult times, and kind of went off for a number about almost 25 years, and did various things which weren't very satisfying, and I was always deeply troubled that I was not doing what I was supposed to be doing in life, and at the age of 49. I made the decision that I would, in fact, do whatever I could to find that thing, to direct my life in a place and in a way that would be meaningful. And once I had that made that decision, the field, this ET issue, just very quickly came together. It was like it had been sitting there in the back of my mind for many, many years, waiting for that opportunity. And I plunged in immediately. I went to work out at John Mack's operation and never looked back. It's my life's work. It was what I was destined to do. And I found it late, but it's better late than never.
And you love it.
It's the most interesting thing you can imagine. I mean, there's just endless projects and things to do. I've met extraordinarily interesting people. It may be the most important issue of all time. It's certainly leading to the most profound event in human history. How could you not love this? Any hardships I've experienced are nothing, are trivial, though I know some people in the field who have really suffered much more than I, and I worry about that. And it's because of the embargo and the ghettoization of the issue by the government. And I feel bad for that. But nevertheless, I'm glad that I did this. And I've got plenty ahead of me. We've got a wonderful conference coming up in September.
Are people invited to this? Can they attend? You know, they purchase
yes.
A fee.
This is full-fledged. Got a full website, xconference.com. We had 750 at the first one in 2004. All the presidential candidates are being invited, of course, or to send a representative.
How many do you think will show up? Who do you think will show up?
Of the 20 that are out there right now on the stage, none. But I will also invite them to send a staffer if they want to. All the members of Congress will be invited. Some did send staffers in 2004 and 2005. I will make it very public that I've invited them, though. In other words, this conference is about tweaking the powers that be. It's about pushing the issue in front of them. And so I will invite them in a very public way. The political media will be invited. Before the conference, though, later this summer, I'm going to be distributing through XPAC 530 copies of the new Fast Walkers documentary, which has got a lot of good exopolitical material in it. It's done in high definition. I'm going to hand deliver it, literally go through the Congress, you know, all the buildings down there, the House and the Senate office buildings, and hand deliver a Fast Walkers documentary along with a cover letter from XPAC. I've done this before. Fastwalkers.com is where that's at. You want to check it out. And other projects. I mean, there's just unlimited things to do. And, of course, my colleagues like Alfred Weber, they've got multiple projects. And Victor Vigiani is working on Exopolitics Canada. I've got an Exopolitics World Net that I've created that is slowly adding countries. We're going to try to build a network of nested sites. The websites continue to grow. More people continue to come forward. This is just an evolving process that grows every year. And while it's had its setbacks, its ultimate destination is certain. There will be disclosure. It has to happen. It's inevitable. Let's hope it happens soon. And then we can all kind of party a little bit, but then we'll have to get back to work because the new world will be waiting to be built, and we're going to build it.
Okay, let's go to final calls. Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello. My name's Zach from Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Okay. That's where your conference is, Steve.
That's where the conference is. You better come, Zach.
Let me first say I'm a pretty firm believer in all this. That being said, I think it's kind of wishful thinking the government's ever going to actually come out and say that they've been lying to us all this time. If they have anything, they're going to keep it a secret, deny, 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 until they have no choice but to say the truth. You never know what they've had to do to keep this quiet over the years, and I don't think you're ever going to get anybody to come out and say different. The people that you finally do get out there to come and say that they've been working on this all this time, they're either retired or they've found a way to discredit them in other ways, and you get any serious politician when they're running for office to say, yeah, we'll look into it. They might briefly say something, but once they get to office, they never bring it up because they know when they do, people are going to laugh at them or they're going to be discredited, so they're never taken seriously.
Let's talk about that aspect. And your phone's getting scratchy, so I got to keep you on hold. Why do people laugh at politicians who try to uncover this story, Stephen?
Well,
and they do. He's right.
I wrote an article recently called UFO RIP, which was published in UFO magazine. It was also published in Fate magazine. And I get into this. I refer to it as the intellectual ghettoization of ufology. It is a process that governments use frequently, not just on this issue, but in other circumstances. and you create a kernel of, and you grab something. In this case, they grab the acronym UFO, and then you discredit it, and then you just accrete stuff around it, and then build the ridicule curtain around that, and you just toss people into the ghetto. And this is part of the whole truth embargo process. It's nasty business, and we need to stop it. We don't need that anymore in this country or any country. But that's what they did. They ghettoized it, tabloid stories and whatever else. You can do that. You can do it to ideas. You can do it to people, and that's what that article is about. This is not good. And that's part of the reason. But I can assure you that people are laughing less and less and less. Again, you know, if this was 1967 and Bill Richardson had written what he wrote and John Podesta had said what he said, they'd have been eviscerated. But it's not happening. And I can assure you, nobody's ever laughed me off the stage. Nobody's even tried. And if they ever do, I hope you're watching when it happens. But,
oh, yeah. I want to be there.
Yeah, no, there's a lot less of it. Now, admittedly, there's always a little giggling. But you know, it's more nervousness because I think more and more people know it's real. And even the ones that don't admit it know it subconsciously, and they're a little nervous about it. And so when it's brought up, is a nervous kind of laughter. But I have to also disagree with our caller. Look, with approval rating of the Congress at 9%, the approval rating of the presidency at 28%, the trust in government all-time lows, I don't blame them for feeling that way. We've gone through 30 years of bad governance, dysfunctional government. So I don't blame them for feeling that way. But the fact is there's plenty of good people in government, and there's plenty of people that want to turn things around, and this issue is huge. It's mega. It's massive. And it simply cannot be suppressed any longer. And they're not going to come out and say we lied. Here's what they're going to say. I'm going to take these words down, all right, because it's going to be really close. Ladies and gentlemen, American, my fellow Americans, we have for some time told you that they're going to say it this way. Look, there is an extraterrestrial presence engaging us in this world. We have not told you this prior to this for national security reasons, but now we are able to tell you this. We have more to tell you, but we can't give you all the information because there's still national security issues. They're not going to come out and say they lied. They're not going to come out and say we did this bad thing and that bad thing. They're going to say, look, we couldn't tell you before. We can tell you now. Right? And what else would you like to know? And everybody is going to be focused on what's next and what can you tell us?
Well, I haven't heard the calming words, though. I haven't heard the words of we're safe not to worry.
Oh, well, they'll tell you that, too. No, they're going to say, yeah. Look, don't be too concerned. There's no reason to be alarmed.
They're not eating us?
Exactly. That's the way it'll go. And so it's not like they're going to come out and they're going to do it in a way that looks good for them. They're going to hire the best PR people, whatever. They'll do it well. Now, is there some interesting news there, maybe some awful news? It may be the case. But once again, you know, they don't have a choice. The pressure on this embargo is building every year. It's ridiculous. I mean, these people have to literally make fools of themselves on a daily basis. Other governments are losing patience. They're dumping records out. You know, France may announce it tomorrow. How do you think they're going to feel about that? They don't have any choice. It's over. Stick a fork in it. It's done. Serve it up.
Quick call. Wild card line, you're up. Go for it.
Yes, George, my name is Wink.
Hello, Wink.
Hey, I'm calling from Los Angeles. I've managed to get through your show before. The question I have is always, there are variations on it, is in the late 70s, there was Close Encounters of the Third Kind and then E.T., and there seemed to be this kind of movement afront to educate the U.S. people about, you know, preparing us, that's the better word, for E.T. contact. And then all of a sudden, then nothing. And then now we're now, and then, of course, now Steven Spielberg makes War of the Worlds. Your comments about this.
I think that you have to be careful about assuming that the Hollywood is lockstep with the government and acting as its information agency. It is true, and I've surveyed all the top grossing movies. Of the 32 top grossing world grossing movies, 11 of them 10 of them, rather, almost one-third, have extraterrestrials in them.
Yeah, or sci-fi-type feelings to it.
There's enormous interest in the subject. I think that the Hollywood has portrayed all the aspects of it. I think Taken, the miniseries, really, that huge miniseries probably got pretty close. I think Contact got pretty close. I think the people inside Hollywood know there's some truth to this. I think that they are representing it. You're getting multiple views. It may be the government has called on them to assist, maybe. But overall, there's both good and positive about the ETs in the movie, and I think when we learn the truth about the extraterrestrials, we're going to find there's also good and good. I say there's negative and positive, and in the reality, there's negative and positive.
Stephen Bassett, always good to talk with you, my friend.
It was a pleasure, George. I'm really glad to be able to come on the show, and I wish you the best, and have a good vacation.
You got that right. No vacation, taking one day. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.